Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we have Bruce Jean. He's fishing guide up on Rainy Lake, and as well as Mille Lacs. He's got a team of guys that work on Mille Lacs as well. And, you know, Bruce, in the open water season specifically, Bruce is a full-time fishing guide. And Bruce, he's born and raised up on Rainy Lake. I mean, to hear his story, being born in northern Minnesota and just really being baptized into fishing on Rainy Lake is a fun and unique story. Obviously, there's not a big population, not a lot of people up there. And, for many of us, it's a destination fishery. You know, that's a place we travel to. But for guys like Bruce, he was born and raised there. And so he's got a lot of great experience to reflect on and talking about the fishing and the destination, highlighting the opportunity, really, that is up on Rainy Lake. It's kind of a long time coming. We've done a lot of shows to highlight destination fisheries and just, you know, highlighting great places to go fishing and then talking about how to fish when you get there. You know, this is one of those conversations, and Rainy Lake is one of those destinations that should be on many of our bucket lists because it's a great place to go. It's very scenic. It really has all the scenery, and it has the fishing to go along with it, and is very accommodating for people of all shapes and sizes. It's a great DIY destination. It's also there's some great offerings as far as lodging and hiring a guide. Obviously, Bruce is one of those guys, and that's why we're talking to him. So, a great conversation highlighting a new guest here on the podcast, as well as a new destination that we're really deep diving into, and that is Rainy Lake in northern Minnesota. So, let's do it. We got Bruce Jean. JT Outdoor Products has created a phenomenal lineup of technique-specific rods built entirely to give any angler the advantage against a tournament field, or more importantly, the target species of the day. For any angler that is looking to take their next fishing experience to another level, consider the confidence you might have with a JT rod in your hands. For more information on all the rod offerings at JT, head to their website. That's jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Also on the website, take the time to look up the impressive pro staff that JT has put together and find out why so many top industry pros, from tournament anglers to fishing guides across the Midwest, swear by the rods built at JT Outdoor Products. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. And we'll get fired up here. So, Bruce, it's a first time on, man. I need to know your fishing story, where you're from, where you got started, your fishing style, your career, but even going way back to the beginning, you know, where you were kind of baptized into fishing and where this all started. So with that in mind, I just want to pass it on to you to introduce yourself and tell us your fishing story. Go ahead.
Well, sounds good. And thanks for having me on, Taylor. So born and raised in International Falls, I was actually born in Fort Francis, just across the bridge where there wasn't really a border. It just was back and forth. The La Verande Hospital in the Fort Francis delivered babies better than the International Falls Hospital. And the nice thing about that is having dual citizenship, I can fish six. So Rainy Lake is on the Canadian border. And growing up in this area, having the ability to access both sides of Rainy Lake, 60% of it's in Canada and 40% in Minnesota here. It's been a backyard playground fiend. It's amazing. I have two older brothers and two older sisters, and my dad would enjoy taking us all camping, fishing. We spent basically all summer on the water, and I remember taking the 14-foot boat out when I was 12 years old. I'd put the life jacket on as far as my parents could see, and then it ended up in the floor of the boat when I was out of sight. You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
Casting for northerns and bass all day long, just back trolling with that 15 horse. kicking it with your knee. I remember the days of casting till my fingers were bleeding. It was so much fun and fish after fish. So, you know, it started with that. The love of fishing was just, you know, instilled by my father mostly just because it's what we lived. Right. And then my senior year in high school, there was a construction company called Ryan Construction. And in 1993, they brought about 110 guys up, and everybody with the boat was a fishing guide all of a sudden. Right. So they needed as many boats captains as they possibly could get. So my brother, my dad, and I started guiding back in 1993 for this Ryan Construction, and it just kind of stuck. A couple of the guys that we took out fishing came up after that, and you know, before you know it, we're at 20 trips a summer, and then we're at 40, 50 trips a summer, and you know, that the guiding business kind of escalated from there. And that was the start in 1993. But prior to that, you know, the fishing in Voyageurs National Park, which is, you know, there's a series of five lakes. We did a lot of trailer camping, tent camping on Rainy Lake, on Namekin, on Captogama, on the local lakes. And it was just fish, all the time, right? And this was before it was a business. And so we would be camping in the tent, get up early in the morning, go out fishing, come back, eat a couple slabs of walleye with your bacon and eggs, and you know, head back out fishing. And it was just, it was life. And you know, being a part of a fishing family, one of my dad's buddies owned and manage Sweetwater Fisheries. And what Sweetwater was they'd buy truckload, semi-load trailers of whitefish, walleye, northern pike, tulipee. They would buy all kinds of fish from Red Lake, Ontario, up north, you know, different lakes that they were netting. And they would come down, and our job was to clean them and package them, get them into ice, and send them to Chicago and St. Paul and areas in the cities that enjoyed the fish from up north. And so 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, I got pretty good at cleaning fish. Oh, and man. Another reason why, that as a 14-year-old, I couldn't drive. And I remember my mother would pick me up at the end of a shift, and there'd be this big plastic sheet in the back of the car that I'd have to sit on. And when I'd get done, I'd have to go strip down at the clothesline, go in and shower two or three times just to get that smell out. And then I could continue on with life. But, you know, that's kind of the start of that. I went into education, and as a teacher, you know that June, July, and August are quite lengthy in the summertime for fishing. And the fishing world revolves around tourism, of course, and the guiding business on Rainy Lake. But when I was teaching, I had those 3 months to really focus on that. And for a while, I really fished heavily in the World Walleye Tour, you know, the Casino Cup. And there were the seven that years ago now, but you'd fish Devils, Leech, Winnie, you'd fish, you know, just the lakes that had a casino at it. And we had some excellent success in that. And that kind of got my tournament blood going, and kind of drifted back into more of the guiding. And now I kind of have a good balance of both. Fish four or five tournaments a year. Enjoy the tournament scene, Bemidji, Gull Lake, Mille Lacs, on Rainy River here, some sturgeon tourneys. It's just fun to compete again, and to see the world in a more competition, looking for bigger fish, scoping more than hoping, and that kind of stuff. So, but that's kind of how it began as far as the fishing aspect of it. The guiding business started, like I said, back in 1996, 1997, I had a student that was technologically advanced, and he started my first Hotmail email address. You probably don't even have a Hotmail address, do you, Taylor?
I do, actually. I do. I'm old enough to be in the Hotmail era for sure.
All right. He said, well, what's your favorite fish to fish for? And I said, well, walleye. And he says, all right, you're going to be Walleye at Hotmail. Well, that was taken. He said, well, you'll be Bruce Walleye. And that one was taken. He said, all right, you're Mr. Walleye at Hotmail. And so that's where that started. So back in 1996, that's how that originated. And, you know, shortly after that, I obtained the website Rainy Lake Guiding and, you know, the natural search of that. And it just kind of stuck. And I taught for 7 years and had all, seven great summers of guiding and fishing. Then I was an athletic director for 4 years. And that was a job that I absolutely loved. The hours were tough. And then I went into the world of principalship, where I've been guiding less and, you know, of course, working on that career. And that's where it brings me to today. So, that kind of, developed the, you know, being in the Elk River district, it's a little bit closer to Mille Lacs. So I branched out and started a guiding business in Mille Lacs as well. So, I spend a majority of my summer in Rainy Lake. I have a house up here on Rainy, and then started a guide business on Mille Lacs with eight of my buddies, and we enjoy taking people fishing on both bodies of water. So that's the origination of Rainy Lake and Mille Lacs Lake Guiding.
There you go, man. Yeah, a lot of rich history, especially, you know, talking about being born and raised up there. That's definitely a unique story. I mean, you're born up there. There's not a lot of people up there. That's not a lot very populated. Like you said, the fishing conversation is more of a destination or it's a tourism kind of conversation. I mean, most people travel there to fish there. There's not enough, you know, there isn't as many people that are just from there like you, man. But that gives you kind of unique perspective. Kind of brings us together talking about Rainy. I mean, we could talk about a lot of things, but talking about Rainy, I'm very curious, you know, for somebody like you that's born and raised there, you know, talking about what it's like to fish up there. I mean, how would you describe it, or maybe, you know, still along the lines of getting to know you and your experience up there, what is special to you about Rainy Lake? What's the experience of fishing, you know, growing up fishing on Rainy like for you? Like, what's that story? What do you love about it?
Yeah. So Rainy Lake is a unique, it's unlike any other lake in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota. You know, I mean, it's so different. It's a glacier shield lake. And if you've been up into Canada, you know what I'm talking about. They're cut into deep rock. You have 120 foot high white pines encompassing the backdrop of 75 foot rock cliffs. And the glacier shields of Rainy Lake, the scenery is absolutely incredible, for one. But being born and raised here, having Rainy Lake, Namekan Lake, Kaptogama in our backyard has been a blessing in disguise. I mean, to have this playground, as my dad used to call it, he was an electrician at Boise Cascade. So he had a good career up here working in the mill and raised a family here. And we were recipients of having Rainy Lake in our back pocket. And it's been incredible. The beauty of the lake is one thing, but the fun part about Rainy is it's a very stained body of water. The water is very clean. The fish are clean. You know, the pollutants and all that they're very non-existent on Rainy, which is a good thing, especially when I eat fish as much as I do on this lake. So, my mercury level is a little high. I shut the light off. I glow in the dark. So I think that's bad, but no, I mean, that's kind of anywhere, you know, but Rainy is a stained body of water, and it has to do with, you know, there's a lot of minerals that come from the rocks. There's pollen from the trees, and there's also some particles from the bogs in the area, a lot of that. So there's a combination of all three things that why Rainy is stained. And the importance of a stained body of water is that you can catch fish all day long. In fact, the power hour of 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. or, you know, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on other lakes, that doesn't work for Rainy. It's too dark down there for fish to feed. So my best fishing times are anywhere from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. you know, that, and they're like, well, that doesn't make sense. You know, at, when we guide on Mille Lacs, it's that power hour, you know, right before dark or right at sunrise, where rainy is a whole different ball game. We can, like yesterday, for example, I had four people. We left for a guide trip at 1 o'clock and we had our limit in an hour and a half. We had 16 nice walleyes. They were all 14 inches. Bright sunny day. We're fishing in 26 feet of water. We're on the reefs. Rainy's dark stained water caused that. Now try to go get a limit of walleyes at Mille Lacs in 20 feet of water. You just can't do it, you know. And of course, what's the limit now? So
that's, well, that's yeah. Relatively speaking, though, yeah. Try to go stack them up. Yeah. Point taken. Right. For sure. And along those same lines, I'm just still so curious about learning about rainy and you know, just the seasonal patterns, you know, talking about the conditions and what the lake is like. I mean, you know, more along those lines, the lay of the land, the details of, like, you know, the seasonal patterns, what you typically see, you know, throughout that summer, that open water season, and you know, just some of the things you do to stay on the fish and the techniques and stuff. I want to hear about all of it, man. So keep going.
Sure. You know, the spring, the early ice out bite, you know, like always, the fish are up shallow, and there's the nice thing about rain is there's bays facing every direction. So if we get a strong north wind or a strong south wind or east or west, you can always get on fish because those windblown shorelines are loaded with phytoplankton and place where bait fish like to feed. And when there's bait fish, there's going to be fish. And that's probably some of the best fishing early. You know, you're pitching a small 1/8-ounce jig and a minnow up to shorelines, popping them back. The fish are just on a feeding frenzy. That's early. As it transitions out, of course, the fish get to that 6 to 10 foot range. I like slip bobbers up in the shallows, or they get a little bit deeper. They're on break lines at that time. And instead of looking for fish, I'm looking for pods of fish. I'm looking for pods of bait fish and schools of shiners and smelt. And, you know, there's a lot of that around that these fish are eating. And so you look for those, and then right below will be those fish. You know, about the June 20th deadline timeline, the fish start going out into the reefs. And rainy is loaded with rock reefs. In fact, one of my buddies was just up here with his son. He let his son take his boat for a ride. And about 30 seconds later, his son calls, Dad, I hit a rock. So there's a lot of those reefs. There's a lot of reefs around the area that will get you. And you know, that middle of the summer till about September 1st, reef fishing is absolutely lights out. And, you know, you can have the skills of live scope and you can utilize those, but really the most important, especially if you have 3, 4, 5 people in the boat, you're, you know, and I'm guiding, we're fishing straight down and we're sitting on top of fish that are pretty much stationary, feeding around humps, mid lake humps that are, you know, surfacing in the area. And that's a fun time to fish because not only are we catching good eaters and good numbers, but we're catching nice fish as well. And Rainy Lake has a slot size 18 to 26 inches. Those are immediate release. So, you know, that, and anything over that we generally release anyway. But just yesterday, you know, the 16 walleyes, they were all 14 to 15 inches. They were nice keepers, right? And those are the eating fish that, you know, a lot of my clients, they'll have shore lunch and eat, and that's their favorite. But we had a 27 and a 26 inch double yesterday, and they're right in there with the other fish. And sometimes they're a little bit shallower, sometimes a little bit deeper, but that's a great time to have those mid lake hump feeding frenzies. And, you know, you can live scope definitely. But just the down scan and good sonar will help put you on fish there. Then, and you know, end of August, September, the feeding frenzy of the bigger fish start to kick in. And that's when we'll get them in a little bit deeper areas. Fishing generally from June 20th until September 1st, we use minnows and leeches a lot. So we're in that deeper structure. that fall bite, like I'm talking about, will sometimes use slow death. We'll sometimes use, you know, a good crawler bite, or we'll just be jigging a minnow down at 35 feet of water, a little bit deeper. Winding those big gals up slowly is important, you know, keeping their air sac in, of course, is a big deal. But, you know, that's when they get a little bit deeper, and that fall bite, that feeding frenzy, you know, they put that feed bag on before the winter. It really is evident on Rainy Lake, and we see a lot of that there. So, but for the walleye bite, it's a bite that lasts all summer long, where some lakes will get those dog days. I can say that there's not a time on Rainy where I'd be like, I don't know where I'm going to get walleyes today. It's that strong of a lake right now. It's been managed well. I think the thing about that is about 45 years ago, a bunch of guys started a Rainy Lake Sports Fishing Club, and my dad joined it shortly after its time. So he was one of the founders of it as well. But what they did was they incentivized people to release the 17 to 28 inch walleyes that were out there. And they did that by, if you let a fish go and you had a witness, that was a big deal. Where's your witness signature? If you had a witness, you would get a free Rainy Lake Sports Fishing Club catch and release hat. And the local businesses donated those. They did such a nice job pushing that. And then they started giving away prizes, and people are like, how do I get involved in this? So there was like a $500 gift certificate a week if your name was drawn and you released a hat and your name was printed in the paper and your if there was a picture taken. And the goal was to let those breeding fish return back to the breeding population. And we saw fishing improve during that time. Not I didn't, but my dad and, you know, those that older generation did. So the DNR looked at that and said, what is happening on Rainy Lake? It's improving. And there's been no stocking. You know, they had a couple ponds that they'd add some fingerling and fry, but the northern pike fed on those greatly. You know, they had some maggot board. They had a lot of things that they did right. The DNR kind of put a kibosh to that, and that's a whole different topic. We can talk about it at a different date. But the sports fishing club really incentivized it. A lot of those bigger fish were letting released, and then the DNR is like, okay, maybe we need to make this a lake thing. And so they implemented a catch and release for this lake, and it was one of the first lakes in Minnesota to have that regulation of it is a slot now and you have to let them go. Well, those 60 to 80 year old guys that were out fishing that had a 25 inch walleye, Taylor, how do you think that went when they had to release that thing? So they didn't always like that.
Yeah.
You know, there were some local businesses that initially were not very receptive to it. They're like, well, why do we have to let those go? You know, fishing's been good. But it came around, and people were like, that makes sense. We do need to start putting those back into the breeding pool. And that came around, and today our fishing is strong. Just the other day, I had three guys out. We had 81 walleyes in a four-hour guide trip. And I'm not saying that for accolades on me. I'm just saying that's how strong the fishery is right now. It's in good shape, and it's nice and healthy.
JT Outdoor Products has created a phenomenal lineup of technique-specific rods built entirely to give any angler the advantage against a tournament field, or more importantly, the target species of the day. For any angler that is looking to take their next fishing experience to another level, consider the confidence you might have with a JT rod in your hands. For more information on all the rod offerings at JT, head to their website. That's jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Also on the website, take the time to look up the impressive pro staff that JT has put together and find out why so many top industry pros, from tournament anglers to fishing guides across the Midwest, swear by the rods built at JT Outdoor Products. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability, the stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. You know, to unpack some of that stuff, you know, from a fishing perspective, you know, you talk about the recruitment on the lake. It's self-sustaining. I mean, you know, tying that into sort of the fish patterns and the seasonal patterns, is there a big spawn run maybe like somewhere particular? Like, is it in the early in the year, you got to be east, you got to be west? I mean, is it a lot of lake spawners? You know, is the spawn spread out? Like, how would you kind of describe that from a pattern standpoint? Is there a core, you know, a population of these bigger fish going somewhere in particular, where you're just, you know, where you sort of start in the spring and then they kind of spread back out to the lake? I mean, how would you sort of talk about that spawn, migration?
Yep. That's a great question. Rainy Lake, like I said, 60% in Canada, and the Canadian side has a lot more sand and gravel and mud. Well, where do walleyes like to spawn? Right. So yeah, they love that sand, gravel, and mud. Now, the Minnesota side or the United States side is mostly rock, and it doesn't have a lot of those sand and mud spots. So the majority of the spawning fish happen on the Canadian side of Rainy Lake. Now, as they migrate over, those reefs that are closest to those spots tend to fill up first. And, you know, that's where they'll be bait fish, and that's where those fish will be feeding. And then they'll work their way back into the Minnesota side, kind of spreading back out. And then again, they migrate back in the fall, back to those deeper holes in front of where they spawn, getting ready for the next spring. So, that's an interesting question. There's not really a spot. You know, Rainy Lake is about 70 miles long east and west, and it's about 60 miles long north and south. It kind of makes a big L. There's not really a spot on the lake that is better at certain times. There's just certain areas that produce a few more because there's a lot more of that feeding area for bait fish, or there's more of that spawning area for the walleyes, or, you know, so Rainy Lake is a big river. It's about a 40-mile wide river at certain places because all the water from all of Voyageurs National Park, all the lakes, flows into the dam and International Falls into Rainy River, and then it flows into Lake of the Woods and goes up north into Hudson Bay. So all of that water is constantly moving. In fact, we were fishing in the middle of the lake yesterday, and it was fairly calm, flat day. Our lines are moving way to the side because we have so much water up here. We had so much rain this year, as everyone has. And that water is causing a lot of current, which is, good or bad, but it's keeping the fish in a healthy feeding area. So I think, you know, looking at the transition in the summer, they kind of stay in the same area. You know, I would say the better fishing's, of course, you can't fish in front of your dock. You got to travel 30 miles the other side of the lake. So, yeah. But the eastern side of the lake probably gets a little less fishing pressure, which is 20 to 30 miles from the dock. And from there, it's a pretty strong bite pretty much all summer long. So to answer that question.
Doesn't sound like it's real tricky. It sounds favorable. Definitely. So if somebody's thinking about planning a destination trip, right, that I feel like Rainy Lake ought to be on more people's bucket list. You know, there's just other places that seem like they get a few more headlines. Maybe that's fair to say, but Rainy, you know, for a lot of people that I know, or, you know, a few people that I know that have ever gone there, they, you know, it's an annual thing. Like, they're definitely heading back because it is just, yeah, it's just one of those places that's unique in its own right. And the fact that you can fish a lot of it, you know, in Minnesota, you don't necessarily have to cross the border, you know, to fish.
Right.
It's kind of, you know, similar to like Lake of the Woods, you know, neighboring body of water and things like that. But, you know, still talking about the fishing, all these topics fascinate me about any body of water, especially these, you know, these real like capital Capital Fisheries like Rainy is. And I've never had this conversation about Rainy, so you're definitely educating me. But you've mentioned multiple times, you know, talking about forage base, you know, kind of like getting into that sort of thing too with a, you know, with any big body of water, the forage base, and just sort of how you make the fishing decisions based upon that, you know, like, you know, you already talk about, you like seeing bait on the graph when you're looking for fish and breaking down water. I want to hear more details of that part of the story and, you know, thinking about people that are listening to this, whether they're trying to relate to their own home body of water and pick up some tricks from you, but also just, you know, anybody that might even think about going to Rainy, they're going to need to know some of this information to get them at least started in the right direction. So how do you kind of, how would you describe, you know, or, you know, what is the conversation with the forage base on Rainy? And, you know, for you, how does that factor into your days of fishing throughout the year?
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, if I break down, let's just say a reef, and I cruise 20 miles down the lake and I'm looking at a reef, and some of, a lot of these reefs will come up to 18, 20 feet, and there'll be areas around these reefs that have shelves, and the shelves are at that 26 to 30 foot depth. And I'm just talking right now because that's where the fish are at. And when I'm looking at these shelves, I will side scan and I will be looking for clouds. And the cool thing is I have a solid mounted live scope on the back of my boat. And I also have the down scan and side scan right next to it. But I'm always watching that live scope. I get to see how fish are reacting to our bait. I get to see how fish are reacting to, you know, where people are at. I get to see where my client's bait is at up and down, right? Like I can see if they're 10 feet off bottom and be like, oh, Susie, let some more line out, or Johnny, you're 10 feet above. So, you know, so there's just a lot of positive that comes with having the ability to see underneath the boat. But when you talk about what the importance of bait fish, this year, especially, I'm seeing more and more bait fish than ever. And that's a sign of a healthy lake. That means the fish are going to be healthy. They're going to have plenty to eat. But that also means that there's competition. So you need to make that competition easier for fish to get. You know, and I'm a believer in match the hatch and so on, but I can't always afford it. Because, you know, at Shiner's at $1.50 a piece, I can put a chub or a fathead in front of a minnow and probably get the same result, right? You know, I can get a close size to that. And what I'm doing is looking for those, and I'm fishing as close to those bait pods as possible, because where those bait pods are, there's fish that are lurking underneath them. And sometimes they're so tight to bottom that they're not able to be seen on sonar, you know, and even today's technology, a walleye can hunker right down and you won't see it. Even in the best Garmin, Lowrance, live scope that's out there, you won't be able to see them because they're right tight to bottom. So if there's bait fish, I know there's going to be fish underneath it. And that's where I will scope and find that the most. But being in that depth, let's just say the 26 to 30, I will circle a reef, and some reefs are the size of a house and some reefs are the size of a football field. But regardless, that depth of where they're feeding is where they're going to be feeding on a hump 10 miles from the dock or 50 miles from the dock. That's the nice thing about Rainy. So at the breakfast table, we'll sit down with the other guides and be like, hey, where'd you get them yesterday? And 27 feet was a key depth. That's generally where they're going to be the next day as well. And looking for that bait fish, looking for the feeding fish. And of course, you know, the fish that are a little bit higher up off the bottom, those are the ones that are feeding. They're looking around. They're the dumb ones that are hungry, right? So they're kind of that buck and rut looking for food, and they don't care what they eat. They're going to be look, you know what I mean? So that's going to been a big deal in learning a new body of water. Now, if you're a newcomer to Rainy Lake, of course, I'm going to promote some guiding as well. Hire a guide for 4 hours, figure out how we're doing it, where we're doing it, and go from there. If you have this, check your sonar, look at the depth, find out where they're at, And bring everything. Bring minnows, bring leeches, bring crawlers. You know, if you're fishing in Canada, you can't bring any natural bait, dead or alive. So you have to have a plastic. Again, the importance of matching the hatch on that is even more important. But you can do that a lot better with plastic. So, but if you're on the Minnesota side, bring everything, throw different things at them, and don't be afraid to mix it up. You know, find using search baits initially, going with a little bit slower presentation, maybe speed it up. You know, there's a lot of technique to use that will help with that. So I kind of got off a tangent on the clouds of bait fish, but the importance of that is find them and there'll be fish around.
Oh, yeah. No, that's excellent. And talking about presentation, I mean, we can definitely go into that. I mean, you know, especially talking rig and bait, like if you're on the Minnesota side and rig and bait is the deal, there's no question. I mean, it's probably the safest bet anytime you're going to, you know, any of these more northern bodies of water. You know, it's never so much fishing pressure on any one particular reef. And if it is, go to the next one. I mean, these fish don't act pressured from the sounds of it. So, I mean, rig and bait, you know, is probably the lowest hanging fruit. You know, how do you rig bait? Give us a little bit of that. Like, what's kind of your bread and butter setup, guiding setups, you know, when you're going out there and you just want to have that kind of that all around universal setup where you can, you can just, you know, rig a minnow, rig a medium sized minnow, or, you know, if it's entirely different setup when you rig a leech, maybe kind of go through a little bit of your progression in that regard, if you would.
So, as a fishing guide, I'm always looking at new techniques, and as a tournament fisherman, it's the same, right? It's two different things, you know. As a guide, I want that rod bent all the time for my customers. Like, that's my goal, is to have them catching fish as much as possible. And walleye are very low hanging fruit on Rainy Lake, and they're a lot of fun to catch. As a tournament angler, I'm looking for the single unicorn that's out there. I'm looking for the big fish that are suspended off bottom or not in a normal feeding column, or those that haven't been caught before. So they're two different things that require two different presentations, right? And so as my favorite presentation started, probably, like I said, I'm going to use that June 20th date. The fish on the reefs are they're hungry and they love minnows, and because that's what's out there. And in the year was 1999, and I get a call from Rainy Lake Houseboats, and the office worker there says, "Bruce, are you open? Let's just say June 22nd." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm open that date." So a guy named Marv Cope is looking for a fishing guide. Well, Taylor, you know who Marv Kep is, right? Marv Kep is the Michael Jordan of fishing guides. Okay.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I follow the Nisswa Guide League. I have buddies that are guides down there, other teachers. And you know, Marv Kep is one of the nicest, best fishermen and just a good person. Right. And Marv, this lady says, "So Marv Cope is looking for a fishing guide." I said, "Marv Kep?" She goes, "Yeah, whatever." You know? And yeah, I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I'll take Marv Kep fishing. Absolutely. So Marv brings his clients up on a houseboat on Rainy Lake, right? And so Marv has about, I'm going to probably say back then, 25 years ago, roughly $500 worth of red tails. Okay.
Oh,
and
yeah.
His client is very well to do. And that, so, you know what I mean? It's just one of those trips. Marv's, live well is plump full of these dollar each red tails.
Oh,
and
man,
he gives
yeah.
me a scoop of them. And I'm like, "Ooh, really?" And he brought them from, you know, the Brainerd area, and his client wanted to see it. And I've always been a lip hook, right? You hook them through the nostril of a red tail and it's killer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Marv said, "Don't tell anybody." Yeah, okay. Yeah. Nobody out there listen to this now moving forward. He tail hooked them.
Hmm.
And I learned to tail hook red tails in 1999 with Marv Kep, and I've been doing it ever since. Now, if I could afford red tails, I probably wouldn't be guiding. But I use the big chubs and I tail hook them. And that's my favorite presentation that I pretty much use all summer long, especially from June 20th to September 1st. If you come in the boat with me, we're going to be tail hooking a Lindy rig about anywhere from an 18 inch to a 4 foot snell, depending on how far up they are off bottom. And that's what we're going to use. And we're going to be tail hooking minnows pretty much all day long. And now you just learned my secret of guiding on Rainy Lake. Can you easily do that yourself? Absolutely. But that's just kind of, you know, and that story sticks with me well, because I learned a lot from a fishing guide as a fishing guide. You know what I mean? And so,
it was
probably the part of my career that exploded the most, that and fishing tournaments and learning, you know, new things from, you know, a couple of my different partners. But it's been a whirlwind of learning new things and definitely different fishing presentation.
And you talk about different leader length for depending upon where the fish are positioned or whatever. Maybe explain that a little bit, like what kind of preferences you have. If the fish are up off bottom feeding, if it's ferocious, are there some things you do to stay efficient or stay on the right fish, or, you know, get more bites? I mean, you know, maybe kind of describe some of that, or give us, you know, some tips and tricks from your experience on that. I mean, because I think, you know, a lot of people are probably comfortable talking about rigging live bait, But yeah, I mean, just kind of learning maybe how you do it, whether they go to Rainy or not. You know, some of this stuff can go anywhere.
Any lake, absolutely. And, you know, the technique of tail hooking is pretty unknown. I have some pretty avid fishermen and proficient fishermen alike that have never heard of it. And, you know, they've been fishing for years, like, you hook them through the tail. And so with that being said, you know, I generally will have 3 to even 6 people fishing out of my 22 foot Lun Pro V, right? And so I have these people fishing, and if I'm trolling at 0.9 miles an hour, how many opportunities are we going to have tangled up underneath the boat?
Okay? Plenty, right? Yeah.
And so the nice thing about tail hooking is you let that minnow work for you. So, you know, it's down there. You have to hold that sinker off bottom a quarter inch. And I tell my customers that, like, how do you tell? And, oh, yeah, I guess. And I use all, you know, high end. I use G. Loomis fishing rods.
Okay.
Static reels. You know, they have $1,000 worth of equipment in their hand. And there's a reason why that I have repeat customers for the last 31 years. Right. They come back. They like the equipment. They catch fish. But it's the technique of the sensitivity. If you have a bigger chub on that minnow, you can actually feel that minnow start to get nervous. You can feel it vibrate the line, Power Pro line, and it directs right into the rod. And that's when I tell people, get ready. You know, it's, and you give it a little bit, you know, once you feel that initial tick of a bite, you know, that sinker moves or adjusts a little bit, that's when, you know, there's something on. Now, the technique of a hook set is not just a whip it as soon as you feel something, because your sinker's on the bottom and that minnow's 2 feet up or 3 feet up, right? So you would whip that minnow right out of its hook, out of its mouth. The key to a proper hook set is the long, gradual, once you've lifted that sinker above the fish. That's the key. So getting that sinker up, and then once it's a little bit higher, that long, gradual hook set. And I'm showing you right now as we're on a telephone, Taylor.
Yeah, right on.
And so, you know, doing that is an important part. Now, some people think you don't need that initial pop, but a lot of times what fish will do is they'll put that minnow in their mouth and it'll be curled up, and the hook in the minnow will be curled up inside of the fish in their mouth. And they'll fight for a little bit. You'll have that fish on because their mouth is closed. They're like, you're not taking my lunch. And then a little bit, they'll be like, I feel line or I feel metal. And then they'll spit it and it's gone. People are like, how could I do that? I had a good hook set. You didn't have that pop hook set. And that's going to be important when you're setting the hook. And if you do miss them, I recommend try that little bit of, get that hook up in the air, that gradual, but then give it that pop right at the end. And that will set the hook inside of the top of the fish's mouth. Yesterday, we had a couple fish that came up, and that minnow was curled around the hook. And I use a number four. Some people like the Gamagatsus. I like the hooks that are sharp, period.
Yeah.
And inside that fish's mouth, having it curl, a couple came back and be like, how was your hook set? Well, I didn't really pop it. And then once they did, then they were catching them, you know, just about every time. So I think the importance of that is knowing, you know, the higher up in the fish column, the longer the leader, the lower they are on the bottom, the shorter the leader. And then I also vary that, you know, if you have a long leader, sometimes it's easily tangled. You know, if you have leeches on, they'll make a knot in themselves on the line. So a little bit shorter. The kids that are fishing, I'll use an 18-inch leader. It generally helps a little bit with that too. So, but rigging live bait, I haven't found a system that works better, especially when we're slow trolling. And I don't even really troll anymore. I'll spot lock over fish that I've found, and I will jog. I'll move 5 feet because I'm always watching fish on live scope. I can see which side of the boat they're on, which side they're going on. I could tell you who's going to get the next bite generally, which is fun in the guiding world. But jogging around these schools of fish has been very effective in finding them. So
that works. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you talk about the gear, you know, that sensitivity, I think, is definitely can produce bites, especially, you know, from a guiding perspective. You know, having that equipment, and you know, you can kind of write that off because you have enough trips and enough, you know, you're getting enough use out of them. Probably a lot of folks that don't necessarily fish that often have a hard time justifying, you know, those purchases, right? But if you get in that position and you do, you know, you do have a little bit more of a budget, or it's Christmas and you're going to buy a gift for, you know, somebody that has everything. You know, a good jig stick. We talk about that a lot of times, but you know, rigging live bait, you know, and being able to detect a bite before the bite detects you is definitely a thing. You know, I like, you know, that you're emphasizing that for sure. But what about, leader material? What about, you know, maybe some of the components? You know, you talk about hooks, you know, as long as they're sharp. Well, I agree with that 100%. I think a lot of the top anglers agree 100% with that, where, you know, talking about sharp hooks and, you know, if you're worried about the cost of some of these top end brands, you know, you can just buy a hook file and you can make a lot of hooks sharp. They just might not hold that edge all day. Right. You might have to catch a few fish and then sharpen again, right? But yeah, talking about components and stuff like that, or leader material, size, you know, line diameter, I'm interested in all that stuff. I think, you know, everybody is always kind of, you know, looking for another recommendation or something to maybe validate their own setup. So how is that for you? I mean, you know, the main line, you know, kind of, you know, your knot tying and leader material.
Absolutely. And that's a great question. I started out a Power Pro guy. Oh, when did Power Pro come out, Taylor? 25 years ago, maybe? I mean, I've been using it since it came out. And I remember getting a spool of Power Pro and paying about four times the amount that I do for my Trilene. And I'm like, what am I doing this for? And you don't have to change line every year. You can let that Power Pro go for 6-8 years and it's strong as the day you bought it. So I like 4-pound diameter Power Pro, and it's 30-pound test, and it's strong, it's thin, and it in the sensitivity, you can feel everything through it. I mean, I can touch a bottom, I can tell you how dense that rock is down there. I mean, that's a piece of scoria down there. You know, I mean, it's very sensitive. But from the Power Pro, then I go with the important part is to have high quality swivel snaps. Don't skimp on swivel snaps. And for two reasons. One, the cheap ones, they open up sometimes and their metal's not strong. But two, they don't spin. And they call them a swivel snap for a reason, because that minnow could be down there. And sometimes when you hook a minnow, they'll spin and spin and spin. And if you don't have a good swivel snap, you're going to have that line curled up immediately. So, I use a 3/8 ounce sinker. I like the bullet sinkers because they sit on the ground better and they don't hook as easily. You know, the big egg sinkers, I feel like they crawl into a crevice. And if you moving any little bit, they lock right in. You never get them out. Where the egg sinkers, I can get those out just about every time if I need a troll back. So Power Pro through a 3/8 ounce egg sinker and then a good swivel snap. And I'm not married to anybody or anyone as far as a swivel snap company goes, but don't skimp. You know, you can get cheap ones, get the higher end ones that have a good lock in them and that are easy to lock. Then this is the important part. I like the extra limp Trilene. It's Trilene XL. And I like 6 pound. I've been going with 8 pound just because it's, you know, we're getting a lot of bigger pike that are out with the walleyes. And I feel like the 8 pound gives us a little bit more. But I like the limper line because it lets that minnow work. And having that ability for that minnow to be down there moving around, I'm finding that's been the most success in having good line there. And you can have different, you know, whatever you choose there, but that's just what I've been using. I use a number 4. I think that size is probably the most effective. Some like a little bit smaller. When I'm tournament fishing and using a little bit bigger red tails, I might get a little bit bigger hook, but generally number 4 has been my favorite for that. So, yeah, I think that pretty much sums up. I use 1/8 ounce jigs. I like the I'm going to go with Northland stand-up jigs. They really do work well, and I enjoy utilizing those and working those back as well. That's in the earlier season, right?
Right.
So, and then, of course, the rigging is what we just talked about there. So,
yeah. Yeah, man. Dude, I like it. I mean, when somebody has, you know, especially a guide who, you know, like yourself, you know, people in the guide world that are on the water and, you know, you're just, you know, you're constantly dealing with people of all different, you know, levels of fishing, IQ and experience. And, you know, you have all that perspective, you know, your tournament, you know, I'm not asking you a whole lot about it, but I definitely appreciate, you know, that you, you know, your tournament experience as well gives you that perspective. We talk about that all the time on the podcast for sure. People that can guide and tournament fish, you know, it's a, you know, an understanding the difference in the balance and learning from both. Like, I think incredible learning happens in both regards. So I appreciate it a ton, man. And just getting to know, you know, getting to know your history. I mean, there's not a lot of people in the world that can raise their hand and say that they were born and raised on Rainy Lake. It's just not a super populated area. There's not, you know, and most people that are probably, you know, that are from up there, you know, they can't wait to graduate and go off to college and experience the rest of the world, right? But for the fish heads like yourself, it's, man, when the shoe fits, you know, there you are.
And Taylor, as we're talking, I'm sitting on my kitchen table looking out onto Rainy Lake I can see part of Canada and I can see part of Minnesota and I get to have that as a backdrop every day. And I just think about how lucky I am to have been born up here, to have the skills to be able to fish and know this body of water. And, you know, you talk about the different levels of fishermen that have entered my boat. And I think last year I did roughly 160 guide trips. Well, I have people that have been fishing for 50 years and those that are 6 years old that just picked up a fishing rod for the first time. You have all kinds of experiences in the boat. And part of it, you know, I mean, as a natural born teacher, I do that in that world as well. But it's so fun to see the light turn on and be like, oh yeah, that worked for this fish. And they do it again and they do it again. And I will say that, you know, in my 31 years of guiding, if I have a couple, a husband, wife, I will explain how to rig in the very beginning of the trip. I'll put a minnow on, I'll set it on the floor of the boat. I'll explain that this is, you know, the minnow is swimming up there and you lift the sinker up. And the woman 99% of the time does what I just explained, right? And the guy would be like, nope, that's not how I do it. And she'll outfish him 5-1. And it's kind of fun to see that, all right, maybe we do need to listen to the person that's born and raised on the water.
Yeah.
Right?
So, I'm all for that. I was, yeah. Like 10 years ago, I was probably that guy that would have just really been, it'd have really hard for me to digest anything anybody was ever saying. And then the more you learn about fishing, or the better you get at fishing, the more you realize you don't know and you got to start listening.
Yep.
Yeah, dude, I appreciate it. Timing is really good on this. I don't want to take up your whole day, but that being said, we've covered a lot, you know, and just getting to know you, getting to know the lake, the lay of the land up there, probably a lot more conversations that need to be had. And then, of course, your experience on Mille Lacs, too. I'll probably be hitting you up when I got some questions on Mille Lacs. I get, that's always a top recommendation as well, as anything Mille Lacs related. But Rainy is definitely, to me, it's a bucket list place. I mean, it's just the way it's built. And I need more people to know and understand that, because, you know, if you get a long ways into your career and it's your first time that you really realize that, you know, Rainy is a great place to be, that's too bad. So hopefully we can educate some people on how great it is up there. It's a cool place to be. And the fishing is great. It's yeah, man, I really, really appreciate all this stuff. So that being said, unless something's really eating at you, we can sign this off with, you know, maybe promote your, you know, how people can get in touch with you if they have questions, or maybe even they want to, inquire about a guide trip, but just any sort of content or any avenues to get in touch with you or research you or ask you questions, man, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. If you do have a long weekend or just a weekend, you know, and you're in the listening area, give Rainy Lake a shot. The bite is going to be great now until October 15th. And, you know, a couple of the places that I recommend staying, I work with Thunderbird Lodge very closely. I work with Bear Ridge Guest House. You can check out their websites or check out mine, rainylakeguiding.com or millaxlakeguiding.com. Either one of those work. And, you know, check out the website, take a look at some of the smiles in the pictures, but then also look at the scenery. And, you know, we've all fished Red Lake. We've all fished Mille Lacs. We've all fished Devils. You know, we know that there's good fish on those lakes. Rainy has the good fish, but it also has the backdrop that people are going to go, yeah, I'm coming back to this place. And generally, just one quick story, but when COVID hit, nobody could go to Canada. So they'd go as far north as they possibly could, International Falls. And they're now stuck at the Canadian border. And we had a lot of people from COVID that we fished with, and our business exploded during that time. But they came to this area and they loved it. They fell in love with the backdrop. They caught a lot of fish and they just had a blast, and they didn't have to put up with the Canadian county mounties. So it's been a lot of fun and a great business. Taylor, I appreciate your time today. It's always fun to share my story, but if you want to reach out, you can definitely check out the website. And if you have any questions coming up, I answer a lot. Just shoot me a quick email or text and we'll get that way. So
right on, Taylor. Man. Yeah, dude. Yeah, man, I appreciate it. This stuff gets me fired up.